Hey, what's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Canucks insider Thomas Drantz. You can also read his work at The Athletic covering the team. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Drantz, I have a confession to make. I feel like I've built a prison for myself with the what's up intro. Because now I feel like I have to say it every time or else I'm capitulating to you. But I don't necessarily want. I want to mix it up sometimes. I don't know. I'm in a tough spot.
I think consistency is a good thing. I think you should start it with a what's up, and I think you got to bring the energy.
See, now you're telling me to do it. Now I'm like, well, now I don't want to do it.
Well, now I'm trying to free you. Like, I don't know. You got to decide what you want here. I'm not, like, truly, this is not a rock, paper, scissors thing where I'm, like, going rock three times in a row to try and get you to go to paper.
Yeah.
So that I can go to scissors and get the extra Tootsie Roll. Like, well, that's not the game.
We'll see what tomorrow brings.
I know. Would we really play rock, paper, scissors
for a Tootsie Roll? I can see that. I'm sure it's happened before.
Sounds about right.
For the extra Tootsie Roll. What else are you going to do rock, paper, scissors for?
Yeah.
All right. As mentioned, I just had to get that off my chest. I don't think that was my most hearty what's up to start the show.
Yeah. Disappointing
just,
stuff.
I've got that. You know what I have? I have those pre-All-Star break on Wii. Just like the Canucks, I think, do this week. We'll talk about that.
And understandably.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about that more in the whiteboard.
We'll talk
in
about
just
how
a
the
second.
Season is too long.
Manny Viveros, Vancouver Giants head coach, will join us at 12:30. Always look forward to chatting with Manny from the Giants. So we'll do that at 12:30. Sean Gentile, our guy from The Athletic, joins us at 1. Lots to get into. We will start, as always, with the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, January 25th. Somebody texted in, stick to your structure, Jamie. That's a good point. Got to stick to my staples.
Especially,
can't get away from my staples.
Especially, you know, in the waning days before the All-Star
break. That's
right.
That's when it's most important.
Fatigue sets in.
That's so
hard
true.
To stay focused. You're trying to build hype for Saturday's big game against the Blue Jackets.
Yeah. Can they get revenge for that overtime loss against the Blue Jackets?
Oh, my God. If anyone, Bluff. That is, you know what? Athletes will find anything to motivate themselves. Uh-huh. So I'm not truly going to laugh about it. But let's not pretend that those are actual. Like, this is not a revenge game.
No. It's let's get to the All-Star break.
Yeah.
It's that kind of game. Honestly, okay, so by the
one,
way.
1-2-3 Cancun.
Yes, the Canucks lost 4-3 in overtime to the Blues. I actually have a lot of sympathy for the spot the Canucks find themselves in because this is how I feel every year the week before Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I love my job. I like doing the show. But I'm still like, oh, man, I love Christmas. I love the break. I'm so excited for it. And that last week, I'm like, oh, come on. Let's get to it. Let's get to Christmas. That's where the Canucks are right now.
Two things. One is, it's funny because they looked like Christmas ornaments wearing those silly metallic helmets.
That's a good one.
Let's not do that again. I know the team says they're going to wear it again, right? One more game?
It did not work.
We don't need it.
I found it actively distracting. I know I said on the show this week, like, I have a very narrow band of how much I care one way or another about hockey fashion choices. That's one of the only ones I can remember where it was like, it's distracting me.
I don't like
it. Because it's so bright and glaring.
It would be fine with a white jersey.
Probably.
I don't like it with the blue. Now, so the team looked like Christmas ornaments out on the ice, which is a nice tie-in with your segue. Mm-hmm. And at least they were bluer than the Blues. So kudos.
Yeah, they accomplished that important goal.
They didn't get the 2 points, but they were bluer than the team named for the, well, for the genre of music, but I'm going to pretend it's the color. There you go.
There you go.
The bluest team. At least they didn't get blued out, blown out.
Sure. Yeah, blown out.
I messed up my tenses. Let's move on.
You can you can find some positives, certainly, to take away from that game for the Canucks. They're down 2-0, then down 3-1, come back in the third period.
Yeah.
Dominated play in the third period, generated
they
a lot of chances.
They had points in 10 consecutive games.
Exactly. The point streak stays alive. Now, I know, obviously, a lot of the conversation focuses on the non-call on Elias Pettersson in overtime that leads to the Braden Schenn winner. I agree. It should have been a call. Did PD go down a little easily? Yeah, probably.
Aw, man.
But it still should have been a call.
We are so out to lunch in discussing these things. Like, the reason it should have been a call, in my mind, is simply because within that game, I thought the Canucks got power plays out of two pretty soft cross checks that were assessed against the Blues. The first was obviously the Jake Neighbors one that eliminated what would have been a 3-0 goal for the Blues. And the other was after Mikheyev slashed Jake how do you say his name? Hoffer. After they slashed Jake, after Mikheyev slashed Jake Hoffer. Joel Hoffer, yeah. Excuse me. Jake Neighbors, Joel Hoffer. Krug gave him a shot and was assessed the penalty. So having called two soft cross checks, the referees declined to call a third very similar one. Honestly, it was harder, frankly. Like, that was the most penalty worthy of the three. And yet, you know, I think if you were a Blues fan watching and you were like, man, that is ridiculous, all three of those were bad penalties, I would be more inclined to agree with you than anyone saying the Canucks lost that game because of that non-call. You know, contact down low for me is very much like holding in football. You can basically assess it on almost every sequence if you want to. So it's pretty discretionary when it does get called. Clearly, it's been a point of emphasis, especially over the last week. We've seen a ton of these cross checks be assessed. All I care about is having an internal standard within the game. There wasn't really one. And that would be my only issue with it. I think it's not some gross miscarriage of justice. And people really, I think, lose the plot when they say stuff like that costs the Canucks the win. You know, the Canucks lost that game because they were pretty widely outplayed by the Blues for 35 minutes. You know, and then they lost the opportunity to secure an extra point in part because of that. Distinct concepts. I just think it's not worth getting worked up over.
Yeah, and the big thing for me is
it's
that,
a bounce. Like, know, it's akin to a bounce.
The two talking points from that play specifically, right? One is the non-call, which I agree should have been a call, as you're saying as well, even though it's not like the turning point of the game. I mean, it is the turning point of the game, but you know what I mean.
Can we not talk about it like a gross miscarriage of justice?
Yes, but the other thing is, you know, a sense of dissatisfaction with Elias Pettersson. And, you know, I think it's notable that Rick Tocchet had some, I would say, fairly mild criticism for Elias Pettersson, right? Not exactly blistering after the game
as mild.
Okay, but I don't think it was.
No, I see what you're saying. I think it was frank.
Yeah, it was honest.
Yeah,
but it wasn't.
I think it was frank. I don't think it was mild, though. I mean, I haven't liked his game the last three or four. He's got to skate. He's good with the moves, but you have to have speed. That's when he's at his best. Which he hasn't been the last three or four games. Like, that's not mild to me. That's not, you know.
It's not severe, though. It's not harsh.
No, it's frank.
Yeah.
It's just matter of fact. Like, you know, I don't think it's a big deal one way or the other.
Yeah.
I want to be clear here. So I get why you're framing it that way. But I don't think it wasn't, he was fine.
I think it's very much in line with what we consistently hear about Rick Tocchet. Probably the only time it's
and
ever
gone. And what we consistently see.
The only time it's ever gone beyond that with Tocchet would probably be the I'm tired of answering questions about Kuzi remark, right? Where it's like peaked beyond just kind of frank, honest criticism and some frustration has started to peak out. But the reason I'm not worried about it is because we've seen this with Rick Tocchet. And, you know, we just heard last week when Jim Rutherford was doing the media rounds after his extension and talking about Rick Tocchet and the job he's done. And Rutherford explicitly saying, right, I really like that he holds everyone in the organization accountable, or everyone on the team accountable, from the best players to the bottom guys on the roster. And, you know, we've already seen that with JT Miller this year in instances. And that's part of the process. He's going to hold everyone accountable. He's been empowered by the organization to do that. If he's doing it to Pettersson, I have no issue whatsoever. I don't think it says anything more than just Rick Tocchet, again, giving an honest assessment about one of his star players.
He also benched Zadorov.
Yeah. And falls into the same bucket for me.
We saw JT Miller get benched. We've seen, I think you're right to differentiate the Kuzmenko thing, where it feels like genuinely the player struggled to earn his trust. From what happened last night, it's like, it's not as if Pettersson's not going to be out there in high leverage situations as a result of the fact that he's been, you know, not at his best. And, you know, whether he's been at his best or not, last night he was off in a different way than he has been for the past week. Right? I mean, the play on the 3-1, the Torpchenko goal, right, which is the play that got Zadorov benched for a coverage error in front, you know, we do not see Pettersson get dunked on by a center he's matching up with the way that he did by Kevin Hayes with any sort of regularity. Now, you play in the NHL, it's going to happen, right? Like, you're going to have a moment like that. But, man, that for me is the play where you know that Pettersson's not quite firing on all cylinders.
And the other thing I wanted to say about this, and I saw some of this in the wild on social media in the Dunbar Lumber text line, also from an unnamed producer in our Canucks Talk group chat, unnamed producer other than Lena. So that narrows it down a little bit.
He had 32 thoughts.
This idea that, like, Pettersson taking that hit, the non-call from Shen in front of the net, is indicative of, you know, Pettersson not being strong enough. He's not willing to play inside. Oh, it's going to be an issue in the playoffs. He falls down too much. Is he going to be able to handle when the intensity ramps up? Come on. Like, first of all, this was 3-on-3 overtime in the middle of January, right before the All-Star game. It has no bearing whatsoever on the playoffs. But the other thing is, we actually don't have to guess about how Elias Pettersson is going to play in the playoffs because he's been there before. Yes, it was the bubble. If you want to put an asterisk, that's fine. But he had 18 points in 17 games. And I don't think, bubble or not, I don't think the Vegas Golden Knights were a pushover in that playoff series, and he still performed really well. So I don't buy this for a second, this idea that, like, he's not built for the playoffs. He's not going to be able to get it done when the intensity turns up.
He's like, he was probably 15 or 20 pounds lighter, 5 years younger, and he was swinging games at the net front. No, this is a tough dude.
He'll be fine. He will be absolutely fine in the playoffs. Again, we've already seen it. I know it was a long time ago. It was a weird circumstance and all that, but we actually don't have to play the guessing game on
it. You know what? I kind of think that this game is a good maturity test. Not for the Canucks, because the Canucks passed it, right? Like,
For all of us.
Yeah. They weren't great by any means. Don't get me wrong. This wasn't their best performance. But you'd say, like, given the stakes, given how close we are to the All-Star break, they showed up and put in a professional effort, and especially the pushback in the third period and the first 10 minutes were, like, excellent. You know, I thought, they passed that test. Can we? That's the question, because there's a lot of red meat that you can take from that game. Zadorov got benched. Pettersson got, you know, frankly called out by his head coach. The Canucks lost in overtime, a rare home loss. I think there's very little of meaning to take from that result. Like, I just do. I think this team extended a 10-game point streak. Like, this is what qualifies as an off day right now. You know, even the Blues, like, I thought the Blues, who've now beaten the Canucks twice in the month, right? And sort of the only hockey takeaway that I'd bring out from that game of any consequence, like something that I'm even going to be interested to see and watch for, is, you know, the Blues are a rush-heavy team, right? They are dangerous off the rush, and they have size. And to me, that profiles just a little bit like a Philadelphia Flyers team that we've also seen hand the Canucks one of their three losses in regulation since the start of December.
That's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. This is the timeline. I am curious to see, like, if teams can beat the Canucks forecheck and if they have enough size and enough finishing ability to attack off the rush, you know, is that the profile of a team that can be a tough matchup for this group? That's now, like, something that I'm just interested in seeing as we go forward. The good news for the Canucks is there aren't a lot of teams that profile that way in the West, frankly. Like, a lot of those teams, like Detroit coming out of the All-Star break, that's a team that profiles that way. I'm now more interested in seeing that Red Wings game than I was before seeing that St. Louis game, because I'm curious to see what it looks like. I'm curious to see if this is an actual thing or nothing at all. But, you know, short of the Avs and the Jets, you know, most of the teams out West are possession-based teams, teams that want to, you know, possess the puck in the offensive zone and generate off that. The Oilers are like that. The Kings are certainly like that.
Vegas, for sure.
Vegas is actually kind of the most of those Pacific Division teams. Dallas, for sure, is a possession team.
Yeah.
But Vegas can attack you in every which way. So that sort of makes them an interesting one to monitor here. Point being, I just think the only real takeaway that we should have from that game is Canucks played pretty well, and it would have been understandable if they hadn't.
Mm.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah, and they've got another chance.
Let's pass the maturity
test. They've got another chance before the All-Star break to do that again, right? Turn in another professional effort, make sure you get a point, manage it, don't blow it against the Blue Jackets.
And don't get hurt.
Don't get hurt. That's
like,
right.
That's it. That's every – at this point, when you know, there's going to be some games that really matter on the other side of the All-Star break.
Yeah.
Four against the Kings, two against the Avs, three against the Jets.
Yeah.
Like, two against Vegas, one against Edmonton. We're about to enter a gauntlet stretch in which this Vancouver Canucks team is going to play some of the most exciting high-stakes hockey that fans have been able to attend in 12 years. Okay? That awaits us in 2 weeks.
Yes. We just have to push through. We just have to push through this part.
But right now, Saturday night against Columbus, don't get hurt. And it's a win.
Okay, just one last headline before we move on to the broadsheet. Pew Suter with a hat trick. Shout out to Pew Suter. What a phenomenal signing. 2 years at that cap hit, can play literally everywhere. He's on the first power play right now. Third period hat trick to help the team earn a point in that one. I just wanted to give the shout out to Pew Suter for that game.
Who, by the way, would you say that he was like the patron saint of this show?
Of your guys?
I'm not even going to take
that much credit for it. Like, you were on Pew Suter more than me, for sure.
Well,
when they signed him in August.
You have to be a true sicko to be as on
when
Pew
they
Suter.
Signed, that's like the most excited I've ever heard you. I think you did the Halvard and Brough hit after they signed Pew Suter, and you were like giddy, legitimately giddy about the signing.
He's good. Like, he's just, you know, what I like about guys like Pew Suter is if he's your fourth line center, you're like, hey, that's a good fourth line.
Mm-hmm.
When he was centering Garland and Dakota Joshua, every bit as good from an underlying perspective. They weren't getting the bounces as it has been with Bluger there. Put him on the wing with JT Miller and Brock Besser. Bunch of gritty goals at the net front, sure. Like, he can kind of do it all while also being persistently underrated because people look at him and say, not big enough to be a bottom six guy, not skilled enough to be just a good player who can line up everywhere. There's real value there. Canucks have a steal, an absolute steal. It's preposterous that he got to August and that they'll have another year with him at 1.6. Just,
it's unreal.
Fabulous stuff.
We talk so much about all the hit streak they're on with those signings, and man, he is right near the top of the list in terms of value they're getting.
He's at the top. Him and Susie.
Yeah. Broadsheet.
Just want to mention, I guess, before we move on, I do think they missed him.
Yeah, Susie's good. I do think they missed him. The 500 streak they were on coincided like perfectly with
him being
return out of the lineup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the rush defense side, like, that was the one part where I do think the Canucks got outplayed last night. Was, I thought after the first 10 minutes, the Blues pretty consistently broke the Canucks forecheck and were able to get chances off the rush going the other way. Blues are really good at that. So it was kind of strength on Canucks have been a really good rush defense team for most of the year, but I do think Susie's a really critical part of that. I do think losing him takes something off the table in terms of Vancouver's ability to smother teams, with speed off the rush.
Broadsheet rumor report here on the whiteboard. Now, this was, I believe Rick Dhaliwal reported this yesterday. We didn't have a chance to get into it with him on the crossover, but noting that Quinn Hughes has given his vote of support to management on the idea of acquiring Chris Tanev. Now, whether that would be at the deadline or in the summer when he's a UFA, you know, obviously we don't know, but very interesting and not a surprise at all that Quinn Hughes would support the idea of acquiring Chris Tanev. I know you've talked so much about the weight that Tanev had in that room and the relationships he built with. Obviously, we think of Quinn Hughes first and foremost because he, you know, was his defensive pairing in that rookie year, defensive partner, but it wasn't just a Quinn Hughes thing, right? He was extremely well-liked by other top players in that room as well. And it, you know, the more you hear his name, even though we go through the tiers list of what they need and defense and, you know, the Chris Tanev profile isn't necessarily at the top, when you think of those external factors and the more you hear his name, I start to wonder, is he more of a target maybe just because by virtue of that history that he has and that connection and the chemistry than maybe we would think just based looking on the needs of the team.
I'm sure. I mean, Kristanov rocks. Just straight up, like, I think it would be a really cool story if Tanev came back to the Canucks, period. I think every organization in the NHL, there are 31 organizations in the NHL that would be better off for Chris Tanev being part of their club.
Yeah.
In any capacity, by the way. So he's one of those guys. He's one of those guys. No one doesn't improve if you get Tanev. You know, there is obviously a needs conversation there. I don't think an additional defenseman is top five on my list of shopping items, but you know, if you get a chance to add someone of that caliber as a person, yeah, do it every time.
The possibility.
I'm never going to be critical of it. You know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean.
And we talked about
like,
this.
What are you going to do?
But we talked about this in the summer too with guys like Ryan O'Reilly, right? Mm. It's like there are some people where if you have a chance to bring them in because they rock.
Lineup notes from the Canucks, I believe, are on the ice at practice right now. So we'll
Batch.
Try to get an update at some point. I haven't seen it. Maybe
Batch.
last time I called him out and then you checked and it was there. But I looked a few minutes ago and it wasn't there. And it's not there now. So I don't know who's at this practice, but we'll see if we can get you an update. But, you know, I it'll be interesting to see if there's any kind of lineup juggle. You know, obviously the commentary about Elias Pettersson, Nikita Zadorov getting benched in the third. Does that change anything? So those would be some of the questions that I'm looking at, but we will pass that information along at some point in the show. Playoff forecast, Canucks still with a 56% chance to win the Pacific Division. Edmonton at a 32% chance. By the way, what is going on with LA? Blow a 2-goal lead to Buffalo last night. Drew Doughty very vocally ticked off, questioning some of the mentality and the maturity from his teammates. Todd McClellan ticked off. Now they're down to a 5% chance to win the division, projected to finish under 100 points. You know, even their playoff odds are slipping a little bit, still really, really high. But this has gone from like a down stretch to a lengthy, lengthy slide here and a slump for the LA Kings, Trans.
You want me to say it?
What?
That I'm not remotely concerned.
All right.
The commentary is interesting because you can reach a point of no return where you just have to make a change to lighten the atmosphere around a team. But one thing I don't do when a team remains elite under the hood, but is shooting 6% at 5-on-5 and getting 900 goaltending, is adjust my opinion of that team. Served me well with the Oilers. It served me well over the years. Like 12 games, they're one of the best teams in the league in terms of controlling play consistently year after year. Well, not year after year, but certainly this year, like consistently game in, game out. And that's been true over the course of this stretch as well. Their goaltending's fallen off a cliff. Their shooting percentage has fallen off a cliff. It will come back. It will rebound. And so will they. The question is, can they rebound before changes are made?
Right.
Or are they going to end up in that Edmonton doom cycle where you just like you just kind of have to, given the stakes of the season.
You have to do something.
Yeah, you just have to do something to get a team back on track. Knobloch's, by the way, done an actual good job, but I still think Woodcroft's a good coach too.
Mm-hmm.
I think McClellan's a good coach, and yet the Kings, where the Kings are, the commentary coming out of the room, to me anyway, they are now approaching that like critical mass where you get into a self-perpetuating doom cycle and you just kind of have to rip the cord out.
There's just so much evidence in the NHL, too, that coaching changes work. Even if you're firing a good coach sometimes.
Like,
back through the last decade plus in the NHL, the new coach bump is a real thing, and it can pay real, real dividends. So it's tough place to be in as a coach, but we'll see.
An idea for them, by the way.
Yeah.
Jay Woodcroft.
I like that.
He's beaten them twice in the playoffs.
I like that.
You know, like we've seen him turn a team around. I'm not kidding.
We got to take a quick break, but do you have any gambling?
I just want to bring this up because the line hasn't opened for Canucks Columbus on Saturday and the futures remain basically static. The Edmonton Oilers tonight are minus 650 favorites over the Anaheim Ducks. Minus 650 in the NHL is unheard
That's
ridiculous.
Of. Ridiculous. Completely ridiculous.
For context, Gonzaga is hosting the San Francisco Gales tonight in Spokane. and are minus 500 favorites.
Of course, it all comes back to the West Coast Conference.
Yeah, the WCC. No, I mean, like Swansea's down 4-0 in the FA Cup, and I bet that's like minus 1,000.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I mean,
that's a
ludicrous. You never see anything like that. And I'd go further. Minus 650 is about an 86% implied probability. There's value on the Oilers. That's how ridiculous this is.
All right, we'll take a break. That's the whiteboard for today. Up next, Vancouver Giants head coach Manny Viveros joins us to talk about the latest with the team. That's coming up next year on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.